PodNuts wants to thank everyone who supports the network by going to www.podnuts.com/Amazon.
Hey everybody, welcome to Geeksters episode 155. This is a show where we talk about all things geeky. If it's got a computer in it, at some point we're going to talk about it. I want to say welcome to our co-hosts today. A little rough on the intro there, but hey guys, how's it going?
Good here.
Good, good. Doing well. It's cold.
Is it?
It's chilly here.
It was snowy here today.
Snowy?
Really? It was snowy.
We had a beautiful weekend, upper 80s. Well, not, excuse me, upper 70s, low 80s. Got out some sunburns with some softball, and now it's all cloudy and drizzly.
You don't get too many days like that, do you?
Oh, no, not at all. That's an exception, not the rule. And everybody's just, you'd call a business, and they'd be closed. Why are they closed? Because there's sun. Oh, everybody outside. You know, no, it was good. Got a lot of softball in, and like I said, sunburns, and just it was nice to get outside and just get that vitamin D. Just enjoying it. Speaking of vitamin D, which makes me think of vitamin door-to-door geek, tomorrow after, I don't know, it's a terrible segue. that's all I get. Tomorrow afternoon, Dora flies in and he lands in Portland. So Cody and I are going to go pick him up at the Portland International Airport. Oh, wow. And then tomorrow night, Josh, Knucklehead Tech, is driving over from his area of the country. And so tomorrow night in my house, I will have Dora, Cody, Josh, and then I believe Josh is bringing his son. And then Friday morning, we're meeting up with some guys from Salem. And we're all going to go out to eat. And then we're all piling in a van and driving up to Bellingham, Washington for Northwest Linux Fest.
So how far is that from you?
It's about 6 hours.
Mm-hmm. Mm, so give him tour a taste of the medicine he gave you a couple years ago.
Nah, it'll be nice. We go through, we go through Olympia, and then we go through, we're going to go through Seattle. So SeaTac, Space Needle, and all that kind of stuff. And then once you get above Seattle, it's kind of, it's just woodsy, and you go along the coast for a little bit here, and, it's nice.
I haven't seen any dates for Ohio yet.
No, I haven't seen any yet either. But so I'm looking forward to seeing everybody again. Looking forward to hanging out with a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, I'm always getting on me. Make sure you plan ahead of time.
Yep. So any exciting computery stuff you guys did over the last week?
No, not Tim's really.
No.
Oh,
no.
Update real quick on my wife's tablet. I did do a factory reset, and it did solve. It's pretty much solved everything. It's maybe not as quite as fast as it used to be, but it's working properly now.
Was this the Android update? I couldn't remember.
Yeah, the lollipop piece of. I mean, it's. I think it slowed my phone down. Actually,
it made my phone all wonky.
Yeah.
I did remove because I used to use the swipe the finger because I have a Samsung Galaxy. Mm-hmm. Use the finger to log in, and it would just, the phone would get hot. It wouldn't work right. And I've got tired of swiping my finger. It wouldn't read my finger right. I don't know. So I got rid of it. Just removed that and went straight to a.
You just give it the finger to log in.
Right.
I wasn't. That's what I heard. No wonder it got all.
It got all hot.
And, it got all hot under the collar and.
So I removed that. Told it not to do that anymore, told to use the pin, and just instantly huge performance increase. I don't know. The battery lasted longer. It just doesn't go through battery as much. It doesn't get as hot. So the one thing I do need, though, is that if I turn it over, and so at night I'll flip it over on screen side down, but then I'll wake up in the middle of the night because there's something glowing, and the screen has turned itself on. So I need to find an app. I need to find an app or something, but to turn it so when it goes face down to turn off, because it doesn't turn off at all. As you can
even
see,
if you hit the button?
I can hit the button, but then as soon as I get a text, as soon as I get a message, it'll kick back on, and then it won't turn off. So,
Tim, you're satisfied with your HTC M8?
Very much so.
I mean, coming from the Razer, it's a.
Well, it's. I mean, it's every 2 years. The advances in the technology are big, and as far as the updates and everything, like I said last week, I upgraded it to Lollipop. I mean, it was a fresh device. Wasn't a whole lot of anything going on. So I don't know. I sometimes I think that you know, you're almost better off if you can swing it, just, you know, do that you know, reset the factory,
right.
out of the box state, the factory settings. And I know Liam, I've heard Liam recommending formatting the SD card, which I'm sure there's I never asked him why, but you know, that sounds like a really good idea. You know, everything's been, you know, updates, and but yeah, I've been very satisfied, and yeah, there you go.
Great.
Yeah.
But that thing that you're talking about, Martin, you know what that reminds me of? Like, wasn't that horrifying? Like the very first time you ever opened up, like your like a brief bag and pull out your laptop to find it been in there like for hours running, and it was like 200 degrees. And you're like, "What are you doing? I turned you off and I put you in there." And
right. Whatever, oh yeah.
You know, and maybe it didn't. I don't know. Maybe it hadn't actually like shut all the way down. Because I mean, you wouldn't like just put it to sleep, put it in there. But that kind of reminded me of that.
Well, even now, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show. I probably didn't. But my laptop in my, I have just a briefcase type style, soft, and my laptop is hinge side up. So it's, you yeah, know, okay. Right. And I was working on some stuff and I had it on a box. I was carrying a computer in and I went to go open a door and it slid and the laptop slid off. Mm. And I was about 3 feet, 3.5 feet up in the air.
Yeah.
And it landed square on a concrete ground, and I heard a crunch, and I thought, man. So I got inside the place, and I opened it up, took my laptop out, and now I have this nice chunk missing of my laptop on the bottom. But what it's done is it broke one of the left side locking mechanism on my Lenovo that locks the screen down.
Right.
So because what I could always do was just close it. It would go to sleep mode and I'd put it in my bag, and every now and then it would freak out and I would open it up and I would have the hot bag. Yeah. Now I can't. Now I can't do it because it doesn't
lock. I forgot the term for that.
It's technically, that's called hot bag.
It's called I had the hot bag.
Now I can't do that. I have to shut it off every time. So because it doesn't lock closed. And yeah. I thought I could do it. And then one time I got the hot bag and I thought, you know what? I'm gonna burn it up. So,
you know, I could never trust sleep mode. I'm a hibernate man. I like hibernate. It doesn't take that long to wake it up with Nest and Steve. I can never trust sleep because to me things happen. Like it wakes up and it wants to do things. It's like, yeah, not right. Yeah. Then you have the hot bag and that's no good.
Yeah. So I have to shut it off now. And I thought that night I started looking for a new laptop. I said, and then, you know, all right, I'll live with it. It just doesn't latch close. That's all it is. It was off. It's just damaged to the frame itself. It didn't crack the screen. Some of the parts separated, so I had to snap them back together, but the screen all intact. So my vainness, I decided to put that away and just live with it. Not instantly go out and buy another laptop because I have a, you know, because the corner's a little chipped.
Well, there is a duct tape for that.
I know, but it was in pieces. It was actually...
Well, I meant the latch.
Oh, I thought about that, actually. I thought about maybe getting here's what I thought was, get a big rubber band. When I close it, I can just rubber band it, close, and then put it in my bag.
Yeah, that's right.
Because a duct tape will just leave stickiness on there.
That's where I guess this is your laptop for show.
Yeah. Well, no, this is my laptop for work. I'm always opening
it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. You know,
when you're out there selling the sizzle.
Right. Yeah, you can't sell the sizzle with duct tape on your laptop.
Well, you know, it depends on the duct tape. Have you seen how cool duct tape has become recently? I mean, it's just not gray anymore. Have you seen some of this stuff?
Oh, yeah. If I get camo duct tape, nobody will notice, is there?
I've seen camo. I've seen the... like I saw duct tape with Decepticons on. I mean, I saw like all. I'm like, where was this duct tape when I was a kid? Where was this duct tape like 3 years ago? It's just my whole world was just gray, and it's like it just stuck, and I was like satisfied with that. And this whole new world was open to me. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Well, anyway,
but there's also Justin Bieber duct tape too.
Is it really?
Yeah.
You know what? If I had Justin Bieber duct tape, I'll tell you where I'd tell you where I'd rip off that first piece and stick it.
Yes.
But not if nobody asks. So.
Nobody, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So last week I had mentioned something, and I wanted to briefly just kind of go over it, because I felt like I just kind of rushed over it. And it was the big Exchange migration that I had done, moving people from POP email to Exchange. And everybody says, oh, that's pretty easy. But this was a property management company. And so in each location, you'd have one or two users, but then both of those users were also seeing the property email account. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So what we would have to do so how we went about doing this huge migration to all of these users was we would get there and the first thing we would do would reset their POP email account to a password, because I didn't know their password. So we would reset their POP email accounts to a password that I had that I would write down. Then I would log into the web interface of their POP email account. I would then forward everything from their POP email or put on forwarding from POP to or from old email address to new email address, because we wanted to keep the old email address because we haven't done a full we haven't rebranded everything, because they actually we were completely switching email addresses. We weren't which made it nice, because I was able to build up the Exchange backend without having to do anything. I could change MX records and I can redo everything, but it made it tough because I had to go in and forward everybody. So once we went in and forwarded everybody, then we would log in to the Outlook with their temporary password that they were getting, that they had been received. Then they would reset it to a password that they wanted via the webmail. We would then log into Outlook and set up the new account on the same Outlook profile. So now the user has, martin@123.com and martin@abc.com. We would then have to copy all of everything from their inbox from 123 into the inbox at ABC, sent items, people, calendar. So we'd do all of that for each individual user. Now what would happen, we would need to do this again, the process again for the property. But what happens is everybody between the two users, they would see everything on the same inbox, but maybe their contacts were different, the sent items were different, the calendar was different. So we'd have to kind of pick and choose, well, who uses it the most? And if there was a manager and an agent, chances are the agent has used it the most. So we would go through the same process, log in, reset the password, forward, and then log in, reset the password again, create the property account, copy all the stuff from the sent items, the inbox, the calendars and stuff from the agent, leasing agent. Then we would just set up the account on Outlook in for the manager, and then we would just take all of their sent items and move it over. And so you wouldn't get duplicates, but now we were combining all the sent items, so that way when somebody went and wondered if they had sent something to apartment 102, whether the leasing agent sent it from the computer in the front or whether the manager sent it from the computer in the back, they had record of it being sent.
Sure.
So that would be, that's one location. And that's only two computers at one location. We had other sites that had seven users, four users checking email for that. Then we'd have one site where it was just one user but two email addresses. And so this is why this process took, almost 21 hours to do, is just because we would have to do all of those little steps. And they're nothing hard. It's just big, giant steps. And you just have to wait. And we would leave and then have to come back. And then we'd had a couple sites where three sites were checking all three sites' emails. So on site one, I could do site one. And on site two, I could do one and two. And on site three, I could do one, two, and three. And then go back to site two to get three. And then go back to site one to do two and three. You know what I mean?
It reminds me of the man on the river, on the side of the river that had... He had the chicken, he had the fox, and he had something else. And he had to get them across the river, going two at a time. It was a bushel of wheat. It kind of reminds me of that sort of thing. So no foxes ate chickens. Then you got it all worked out.
No, but yeah. So that's why it just took so long. And I felt last week when I just said, "Oh, I just did an Exchange migration," that It was a lot more in depth than that. Moving from a POP to an exchange account was pretty frustrating. But what happened now is we had, you know, so this earlier this week, there was a gentleman who had worked in one location. He now has moved to another location. All he had to do was use his webmail. He has got a tablet now. All they did was go, and we had the people who roam around a lot who don't actually have a physical computer. If they have a tablet or a smartphone, we have them get the Microsoft Outlook. It's called Microsoft Outlook Preview on their Android and or iOS device. They just log in with that. You've got your contacts, your calendars, your sent items. Then they can log in the webmail. It looks the same. And he was just, he was pretty ecstatic that, you know, he, even though he moved a location, because we've had people move before, and it's like, well, where's my sent items? Well, they're over there. So I have to export from site A to move to site B, and it creates, it's just, this, it, yeah. It can be done, but it's a hassle. Now, person moves from site A to site B, sit down, log in, done.
Like it should be. And so this was, it's like a, this is what the, what you call hosted exchange, where, and that's, okay, and so basically what that means is that if this company doesn't own a server with Exchange running, right, they're like, how does that, it's, where is it?
Well, it's in the cloud. It's through, and you can get hosted Exchange through third-party companies like SureWeb or I think GoDaddy may have some, but I'm not sure. There's a couple other places out there that resell hosted Exchange. I have a rep here locally in the Portland area that I've gone through, and so mine is right through him, but he doesn't resell it through me. I go straight. He's in a Microsoft account rep, so I get, instead of going through like SureWeb and using SureWeb's stuff, I just use my own MX records, but I believe they're just right to Microsoft.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And so, go ahead.
Well, that's a phrase that I've heard so many times, hosted exchange. How would one arrive at finding the best?
Well, they're all the same. So, I mean, it kind of depends on what you want to, what, so, you know, some people like Fords over Chevys or Toyotas over Hondas. It's kind of like that. So if you're a big fan of like SureWeb, which I've used in the past, you can go through SureWeb and get hosted exchange through them. Or you could just go what I do, and I have my own rep, and I just go through them. It all lands in the same spot. It all gets hosted by Microsoft. And all it is instead of having Exchange server on site, that whole Exchange server is in the cloud, which means that you still have to change your MX records, your mail records on your domain. You still have to do routing. But it makes it easier where now if a person is on site at the location or off site or traveling, you can get all your email and it just synchronizes.
So hosted Exchange is Exchange hosted by Microsoft.
Right. Or another third party company. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess that's my question. The third party company.
So I don't know how, like say SureWeb, for example, I don't know if they're actually, if they have physical boxes in their colo, you know, or their location where they would say, this is our Exchange server. I don't know that. So all the hosted Exchange means is that you are paying somebody else to actually host a physical box that you have your Exchange server. Now, some people like that, and some people don't. You know, some people like to be able to say, walk over and physically touch your box and say, this is my email. But then you have to be responsible for managing and maintaining that box, and managing and maintaining the network, and managing and maintaining, you know, backup plans. Because if, say, your network goes down, then mail won't make it to you. So then you need a secondary mail record, which will then say, if I can't get to site A within a certain amount of time, fail over and go to site B. And then site B is always checking site A. And then when site A comes online, site B forwards all of that email to site A, and then you get all the email, and you haven't lost anything. You need that if you're hosting yourself. If you have it hosted in the cloud, there's already built-in redundancy. You know, if a path to San Francisco goes down, but yet your data is being spread between San Francisco, San Jose, and New York, then if San Francisco goes down for whatever internet connection, then it just, you have redundancy. So you don't have to worry about setting that up yourself.
Well, and you're talking about temporary network related issues, but obviously you would need backup. You need backup. So, as you're choosing, you need to know these things, right? I mean, you need to know if Microsoft's handling this, or if it's like just some guy in his basement who's managed to get enough work because people haven't asked enough questions. Right? I mean, you didn't know where this stuff was going. Anyway, I really didn't want to open a huge can of worms, but I mean, host exchange, it's like, okay, I know what that means. I know exchange is. It sits on exchange server, in that little room next to the boiler, but, host exchange is where it does, but it's not ours. We just rent space from somewhere else. They handle all that, but
right.
It's like, okay, well, as far as the details, what exactly is that? Well, you explained that well.
Right. Well, I mean, look at Gmail. I mean, everybody uses Gmail. That's kind of like hosted exchange. Your mail is not, your mail is in the cloud. You're just getting it, and you can have your email on multiple devices, and when you check it or delete it, it removes it from multiple devices.
Sure.
Now, you may be using what's called IMAP, which is a kind of a middle-tier protocol, but there's some things with IMAP that it doesn't synchronize everything. So you have full synchronization, full calendaring, full kind of a more enterprise environment with Exchange. And honestly, it is so cheap these days that you could get just simple hosted Exchange with calendaring, data backup and stuff for less than $10 a month. And then you can just hook it. And then it doesn't matter how many devices you have at all. It all synchronizes it. So yeah,
gotcha.
I haven't made that move over to hosted Exchange just because I have everything at Google right now. And I need to move over there. It's much more stable. It runs a lot faster than Google. The problem is that hosted Exchange Exchange itself doesn't work well with Thunderbird. And since I'm running Linux and IMAP works well, it doesn't work great. Gotcha. So I'm kind of taking the lesser of two evils. I want to go that way, but to do that, the easiest way, and when I was working in enterprise environments, the Linux guys just ran a VM that just ran Outlook on it, mm-hmm. or they ran Outlook and Wine. I could do that, sure. I'm kind of being a purist, I guess. I don't really want to do that.
Yeah, what you have is kind of what's evolved over time, slowly. It's what you have. I suppose you could spend time, think about it, make the best decision, and have a project, but you don't really need a project right now, do you?
No.
Nah,
okay, and that's part of it. It's like, well, I could do it. I could try to make it work. I could get it to work better. Or, it's already in motion. Things are running smooth. I get paid. I send out invoices. My accountant gets paid. She sends out invoices. Taxes get done.
Well, that's as long as you're getting paid.
Right. So,
I'm a Lycos man myself.
Well, I like Dogpile.
Dogpile. I actually got a Lycos email address a couple of years ago just because I still could. I think you still can. I think you can get a free email address. It's amazing. It's still there. Yeah, it's still there. It's good stuff.
I have a I have a client right now who's having only one user, and maybe somebody can shed some light on this. I have one user in one location who cannot send to two AOL addresses. It bounces back. It just says, and it's not an undeliverable address. Well, it's an undeliverable address, but basically if you look it up from AOL, AOL pretty much says because it's from Google, it's a Google business account to an AOL account. It says, nah, we don't like this one. It's not preferable. I think we're the words it uses. Now, user two in the same location, physical location on the same physical network using the same and a different email address within the same business, the same domain, sends to those AOL accounts, works just fine.
That's kind of how I remember the 90s.
Right. Okay, now I'm going to throw you for a loop. So, because it's a Google account, we log into Gmail with the domain, username, and password. We log in. There's your inbox. There's everything. We send an email to the AOL account. The user, the AOL recipient, receives the email. But the sender gets a new email to her as also the receiver.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, wait a minute. I sent an AOL address to that person, and it comes to you as a new email. But through Outlook, it bounces as non-preferable. So the one thing I haven't done yet is create a new email address and then send it and see if it has something to do with your email. But it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you can't. Anyways, AOL just says not preferable.
It's, you know what, and that's being kind.
Yeah,
that's clearly a euphemism.
Right. AOL is pretty much saying stick it.
It's not preferable.
Not preferable.
Not preferable. It's egg and pound salt.
Salt. I've never heard of that one before. Hey, one of the things that I want to mention, and I brought this up on the show before, is this little Link Sprinter that I have. So this is the
Fluke.
By Flukes, Link Sprinter 200. This one has the wireless device, so basically you just plug it in, you turn it on, and it lights up, and you have a cloud, a server, DHCP link, and trying to get focus there. So what happens is you plug this in, turn it on, and it runs through its process. You go to the Fluke network, you log in, you create yourself an account. When it finds stuff, it will email you back, and it tells you it gets this IP address, this DHCP scope, or you know this, and you know it tells you kind of everything about the network. If for some reason you can't make a connection, I think you can hold on or tap it twice, and there it is. You hit it twice, and the little blue light there starts to flash. This itself is a wireless device. Then you can tether your phone to this, use the app, basically see everything without getting full results because you're using just this device. Well, Link Sprinter has come out with one on either side. They have the 100, which is the same thing but no wireless, and then they have the 300, which is everything you get here wireless, plus it gives you cable length. So I spoke with a local Podnuts listener here that I've done some work with before and gave him first dibs and said, hey, would you be interested in buying my Link Sprinter 200 that I paid $300 for that I'm willing to sell for $150? Because it's new. It's not all thrashed or anything. It looks good. Would you be interested? And he says at this time he doesn't have a need for it. So I wanted to throw it out to you guys and our listeners. If you're interested, let me know. I'd be willing to sell it for $150, which is half the cost. It's the wireless device. So if anybody's interested, let me know, because I want to purchase the 300, which is $400. But then I'll have two of them and don't need it. So
if anybody just got an inline ad for something.
Right.
Did that just happen?
It did. So if anybody wants to buy this, I don't know if I'm going to throw the case in it, but you do get the cables and stuff. So Link Sprinter 200.
That's great.
I just want to throw that out there.
Everything must go. I'm just going to start selling stuff here.
So I also have this pen that I like.
Yeah. sell me this pen.
Sell me this pen, the sizzle.
Yes.
The sizzle.
Excellent. All right. You know, that's a line that you don't often hear from that movie.
Which one?
Sell me this pen.
Is that from Jerry Maguire?
You know what?
You don't know.
Well, I'm probably going to get it wrong now. Yeah, I thought that was from... let me see. Don't tell me. From... something.
Wolf of Wall Street?
Is that what it's from?
I don't know. I haven't seen Wolf of Wall Street, but I Googled
it. You just Googled it.
I heard Mitch back there.
Actually, you know, I think it is. Okay.
Good movie.
I haven't seen it yet.
I was thinking of a different movie. You know what? It's take the whole family to enjoy it.
No. It's not for adults. Come on, Sam. I didn't say it was for kids.
I was about ready to hit buy on the tickets.
No, not for children.
No, I didn't think it would be.
You know what? There's movies that I would describe as being very, very good, but not necessarily age appropriate. So
yes,
I enjoy like war movies and all that.
Yeah. God, well, my son turns 15 tomorrow.
That's how old?
15. 1-5.
He can watch it.
I'm getting up. We're early. Normal time, but we're getting out the door early. The DMV opens at 8 o'clock, and we're going to be in line to get his driving permit tomorrow morning.
Oh, I see. Okay, yes.
I already asked. So I have the Toyota that I drive, which has 225,000 miles on it, and it holds up quite well. But the reason I'm driving is because I drive a lot, and there's no reason to put all the mileage on my wife's new Honda, right? The Pilot. Oh. But I asked her. So if we drive away from the DMV, which vehicle do you want, Jonah, my son? I said, which vehicle would you like him to drive? I'm going to let her make the decision.
Don't use the Honda.
Well, the Honda drives so much nicer, though.
Yeah, I know. That's the whole point.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So anyway, so speaking of cars and buying stuff, you can...
What are you selling now?
I'm not selling anything. Oh, okay. I would love to buy...
See, now I'm on alert now. Everything's a big sell.
the one car that I've always wanted, not practical in any sense, is a DeLorean. You can still buy DeLoreans from the factory.
New?
I don't know. They're refurbished.
Okay, all right. All
so what
right.
it is the company, DeLorean Motor Company, DMC, purchased all of the spare parts from all over the world, and they have, in this little video, they've got an ad, I think it's in San Francisco or LA or Santa Monica, Santa Barbara, somewhere, California. They have, no, this is in Texas, I don't know. Anyways, it doesn't matter. They have all of the parts, so they have a warehouse full of transmissions and headlights and doors and windows and, I mean, everything you can need. So you could buy, basically, a new one from them. If you go online, you can go to the company, you can buy one, and they start at right around $56,000. And you can get some down there for like with like 6,000 miles on them. But those are a little more expensive. But if you have the money, so I asked this for my birthday, and my wife already said no. So that's out of the question, but you can buy, if you have the money, a DeLorean.
I want to read this, because I want to know what they say. What I remember happening is that when John, right? John DeLorean. Mm-hmm. When he finally lost the company, right? And he got messed up in some like drug activity stuff, right? Yeah, that's what it was. It was the devil's dandruff. When he I don't know anything about that guy. I don't know if that's something I'm supposed to feel bad about or if that's something he just had coming to him. I don't know. I mean, I give him credit. The guy, you know, worked for GM, had a good thing going, left, started his own deal. That car was really unique in a lot of ways. And
the movie didn't hurt it either.
That movie didn't hurt it at all, but a stainless steel body was a pretty unusual thing.
Cool.
But you know what? The guy, without knowing anything about him, I kind of, you know, I like what he went and did. And although it didn't work out, because but at least he did himself in. But Well, I remember when he finally lost the whole company, when they shut it down, that it was, I want to say it was like bankruptcy lawyers or the banks or something. They were going to auction it off. I mean, when they came in and took it, the assembly line, it was line of the cars in the state of being built. Like they just pulled the meters and shut the lights off one day, and everything just stopped. Wherever everybody was, it just stopped. So there were cars in all various stages of assembly, and that it was the company Odd Lots or Big Lots that actually, that's what they do. Like, you familiar with this company that has these, you know, right?
With the Big Lots?
You know Big Lots?
They've just got like stuff in them.
Yeah, it's like a dollar store, but everything costs $2.
Right.
Yeah. it's a creep plan. But yeah, they've been around for the stores are the retail stores. I mean, they've done a lot to try and clean them up. But you know, 20 years ago, they were just it was kind of like the Goodwill. It's like where everything in the Goodwill store comes from originally. And that's kind of like what Big Lots or Odd Lots was. But anyway, but that's what this company does. I mean, they have the retail stores where they sell all their crazy blowout, close out crap. But, you know, I think the overarching company, like what they do is that they go in and they buy, you know, big lots of stuff. I guess they sell off the odd lots in their retail stores. I don't know. But that they actually went in and bought. I think that they pretty much went in and just, it was like, okay, this is what's left. And they're like, okay, this is what, you know, this is what we'll pay for it. And, you know, it's pennies on the dollar, but that's what they do. And so at one point, you know, it was this company, this awful Big Lots, you know, retail store that they actually owned all of the DeLoreans, all of the factory. I think that they actually, I'm not sure of this, but I think they actually owned all of the, you know, like the, all the dyes, you know, the presses to, somebody does. I don't know of them, but, you know, somewhere that stuff exists that they could start stamping these things out tomorrow, you know, if somebody wanted to. So there's so much mystique wrapped up around the car. And you know what? It's still a beautiful thing. I can see a lot of interest generating this. And you know what, especially with the stainless steel body panels, you know, it's kind of like the fiberglass on the Corvettes and the Fieros and such, that they don't really age the way, you know, steel bodies do. So, you know, they do have a certain timeless thing to them. But I would take a look at that. I'm not a huge fan of the car, like as if I wanted one. But I've always been a very interested follower in the story. It's just a sad story, but it's interesting how it's really grown wings. I'm glad you brought that, Martin.
He was arrested for trying to smuggle $24 million worth of cocaine. He was in a sting. That's a lot.
That's right. Wow. And you know what? By any chance, was it like to try and keep his company afloat that wasn't
probably
well? Okay, that's...
Yeah, because he was trying to get money up and...
He's dead now, right?
Yeah, he passed away a while back.
Yeah.
But, you know, the car... Back to the Future, the movie was cool and the car was cool in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys have been in Disney World or Disneyland before. The one in Disney World, or actually Universal Studios, they had one of the cars there at actual ride.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I went to the Universal Studios in L.A., not mm-hmm. Florida, and I think they had a DeLorean as well. Yeah. Now, I'm able to see more people reposting this, but I swear I was the first one to post this. And I'm proud of that, but nobody's giving me credit, so. Man shoots computer in Colorado Springs alley, gets revenge he wanted, and a citation. So this guy was fed up with his Dell XPS box.
Nice.
It's a short story. Here it is. When Control-Alt-Delete doesn't work, just shoot the darn thing. That's what one man did on Monday night, according to Colorado Springs police. Lucas Hinch, 37, was cited for discharging a weapon within city limits after he took the fight with his computer outside and got the revenge most of us only dream about. He got tired of fighting with his computer for lasted several months, Lieutenant Jeff said. He was having a technology problem, so he took it out back in the alley and shot it. Stroessner tweeted, Hinch, and he said, it's a quote, executed his computer in the alley on the 2000 or 2200 block of West Colorado Avenue. The penalty for the citation will be up to a judge, police said, adding that Hinch was good-natured about the citation and hadn't realized he was breaking the laws when he went wild west on that useless piece of technology. Hinch shot it 8 times, Stroessner said, quote-unquote, effectively disabling it. The computer is not expected to recover. So this guy gets mad at his computer, takes an alley, and pops it 8 times with a handgun.
Nice.
He could have called you.
And I thought, I did post this out earlier in the week, and I said, raise your hand if you wanted to do this at least once a week.
I went off on a keyboard before. That's about it.
But, I mean, to actually take your computer outside and just shoot it.
I think there is a video on that somewhere. Who did that?
Well, it was an Office Space where they took the copier outside.
But that computer had it coming. You know it did. Oh, yeah. You know it did.
One more stink eye, and I swear I'll take you outside. But the guy was like, okay, I guess I get a citation.
You know, he maybe got a citation. He may have been offered a job, too, in data destruction. You know, he really parlay this into something.
Oh, yeah. It's,
yeah.
So, yeah, we also, one of the things we did receive this over the last week was we received a voicemail from Jeff Owens. Gosh, I can't think of his last name. All right.
Oh, you want to play?
I'm sorry. Bitch, can we go ahead and play that?
Yeah, I got to mute you and unmute that. Hold on.
This is for the Geeksters. Hey, Geeksters, this is Jeff Owens, Black Hammer. Had an occasion of something that happened, and I figured that you might run across this. So here's the problem. We have probably 16 people who have the capability to print to a copier, Konica Minolta copier, black and color. So the drivers are set up mostly for public, so black, color with username, password. All of a sudden, me, 4 users, I'm one of the 4, are not able to print. This is over a capability or a time factor of about a week. I can't print. I can't print. Next day, somebody else can't print. Can't print. We uninstall the driver. Reinstall the driver. Can't print. Go to the username, password, grayed out. Uninstall the driver. Update the driver to the newest version. Can't print. Do a system restore. And can print. Interesting. We've done this one by one by one. The problem was finally on the last person, it didn't work. It didn't work. It didn't work. The problem was the IP address. The four people who couldn't print were in the 192.168.1 range, and the copier is in the 192.168.0 range, netmask 255.255.255 instead of 255.255.254. So check your network settings. One of the things that we hadn't thought about, I called the manufacturer, I called the copier guy, no idea. So thank you guys. Bye.
Yeah. I had I had a school that had gone above their allotted IPs, and so I had to do that to their school. And one of the switches I had given the right subnet to, but the other one I didn't, or something happened, and it was the same thing. All of a sudden, some people wouldn't get on, some people did, and I beat my head against the lab for so long. I think it was the primary router, if I remember correctly. I did everything but the router. And so what was happening is only half of the IPs could get out to the internet and access data where the other half could not. I don't remember if I brought that up here, but I...
Sounds familiar.
I banged my head against this process, and I was in the lab, and I was working, and I would reboot, and yep, that's exactly what happened. And that's a great reminder, when especially... It just shows you what subnets, if you don't put the right subnet in, you can bring down a lot of traffic.
Mm-hmm. I like the idea of him, hey, let's try sys restore, and then it works. It's like, aha. I must have missed something, but I don't understand how, what changed? What happened? How did...
So if you take an IP address of 192.168.0. one through, it'll be, one through 254, because zero and 255 are unusable, right? Yeah. That is a /24. So the only usable ones, the only usable IP addresses are .1 through 254, correct? And that's what you're going to see most of the time in homes, right? Well, if you run out of, that's 253 IP addresses. If you don't have two, if you need more than 253 IP addresses, you need to adjust the subnet to give you more. So what he did is did 255.255.254 instead of the last octet being 255, which now allowed 192.168.0.1 through 192.168.1.255. Does that make sense? Now you've gone into the next range.
Yeah, it does. So he's in an environment where that actually happens. They actually, right. Okay. All
right. Right. Okay, so they made that change, but they didn't. If you don't change the subnet on every network device, you can only talk if you're in that same subnet.
Yeah. No. Okay. That's crystal clear. My world is like, it's much smaller, and so it's, you actually, we define, hey, this is the range. It's like, we don't even want anybody out in that wasteland of like 200 something.
Right. Yeah, in a home environment or even a small
everything below 50, that we don't even want you down there. Because it's like I'd like to segment out, part for just, static IPs for, hardware printers and whatever else sort of stuff. It's a range for the users. It didn't click to me until you just said that. It didn't click to me that, that whole range isn't enough
out there than the home.
Out beyond that, and so that, okay, I'm crystal clear now. So, all right, well, and now that I understand the problem, how do you fix it?
So what happened was, is the copier was still on the subnet of 255.255.255.0. So only people in the 192.168.1.x range could do it. Anybody with an IP address of 19 could talk to this or talk to that. Anybody in 192.168.0. something could not even communicate with the copier. And so when you reboot the copier or you reboot your computer, you may or may not go out and get a new IP address. Right. If you were to go in and remove all of the DHCP leases and everybody gets it, then it's first come, first serve.
Right.
There could be a chance that somebody who could not talk to it all of a sudden could. It's because now they got a .1 IP address, which could talk to it. So Yeah. So what's happening is you're covering two things, and David in the chat is putting some notes in there. He's saying that so 255.255.255.0, that subnet will gives you 253 IP addresses, usable IP addresses. You drop it down to 255.255.254. Now you have 510 available IP addresses. So it's covering two Class C subnets. You're not gonna, like I said, in a home environment, you may see this in a home environment, but it's because it's on purpose. Generally speaking, 99% of people who are using a small network, you know, or anything like that, you're not going to need to change that subnet. That 253 IP addresses is going to work just fine for you. But in the school that I have, you have a lot of kids, you have iPhones and iPads, you have tablets, you have, you know, teachers' phones, you have all the teachers' computers, you have copiers, you have a printer, you know, it could fill up. And especially if...
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Right, and especially, Tim, if you're talking what you did, which is what I do, I segment things out, okay? This range is for printers, this range is for servers, this range is for copiers, you know, now all of a sudden, maybe you go, okay, now your subnet for your DHCP scope is only going to be, you know, 100 through one through, say, you know, 230. Well, now, if you need more IP addresses, you can either take it away from stuff you're already using, but if that's full, the only way to go is the other way. So you have to change your subnet. So you could run into this in a mid-sized business, where if there's enough devices that need more IPs than you're willing to give in the DHCP scope, and keep your little buffer for, you know, testing, for servers, for printers, for whatever like that, you have to then expand that range of IP addresses to another subnet, and that's where you would make that change in the subnet. You would just change it in the subnet itself. And now the DHCP scope knows to hand out 510 instead of 253.
That's beyond my pay grade, definitely beyond my education. But have you heard the problem? What did you solve it? And your explanation right there, you know, I have a pretty good grasp of what's going on. So yeah, that this just hasn't applied to the situations I've been in. But yeah, okay, got it.
So it is one of those things where you change it and think nothing of it, and then remember, oh, there's one device that we don't think about very often. It may be a router, it may be something else, and that if that doesn't get changed, then you can't talk to it at all. And then
do this with a regular router, and you don't have to have a special router.
Nope.
You just change the 255 to 254.
Yep. Oh yeah. You can if you did it in
I have these three PCs
right
for the show. I have on static IP address because I use this program for I can control all three PCs with one keyboard and one mouse, and I set it up by IP address, you know, static IP address.
Right. I don't, you know, a lot of the low-end home wireless devices or routers may not allow you to do that because a lot of times they're just a drop-down or something along those lines. They're very simplistic. But if you can modify it and it gives you a bigger range in your DHCP scope, then there is a chance that you could do it. And really, if you're really doing this and doing a lot of subnetting and you really needed to create different networks and segments and stuff like that, you need something a little more advanced. And David in the chat room is actually talking about VLANs, which are virtual networks. That's taking subnetting to a different level. That's actually assigning different IP address ranges within the same major organization so you can segment out HR, financial, executive team, technology. Now, they all may have different, completely separate IP address ranges, but on the switch where they all talk to, you give commands that only allows, maybe technology can see everything, but not everybody can see technology.
You need a multi-layer device for that, right?
Well, no, you just need a router that can handle and a switch that can handle what are called virtual networks. Okay. And so you can give them, you know, maybe you're going to give all of admin 192.168.1 dot something, and all of HR 192.168.3, and the next team 192.168, you know, 5. Now, if all of them only need less than 253 IP addresses, then your subnet on each of them would be 255.255.255.0. Now, because of that, you've already just said, based on the subnet, they aren't allowed to talk to each other. So then in your switch, you have rules that say allow this VLAN to communicate to this VLAN or vice versa, or allow all of these VLANs to get out through your primary, you know, which is usually, I think, VLAN 0. That would be your base one. That's how it gets out to the network. And that's, I mean, now you're talking layers upon layers. And
look at David.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, David has said that his home network is carved up into 12 VLANs.
He's got more stuff than my company.
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't have 12 rooms in my house.
I know exactly. I don't think I have 12 computers. So.
I don't have 12 receptacles in my house.
The stuff at work we have is so antiquated.
You're awesome, man.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think that guy is doing the work that he was made to do.
Yeah. When I come over there, I have a dictionary because he's talking to me. I have a dictionary because I don't. It's cool. It's really cool.
It is cool. So now we've talked about VLANs. We've taken it kind of propellerish, if you will, for the show. We're gonna take it back down. Do you guys remember screensavers?
Yeah, they had a reunion. Well, yeah.
Screensavers is coming back. Yep, May 2nd, Twit is going to relaunch.
Oh, man. See, that's what you do. You don't come on our show and start talking about some other show. What's wrong with you,
Mark? Yeah.
That's it, man.
We're
shutting you down. The guy's doing advertising for his stuff, trying to sell himself. He's over here talking about some other shows. It's like, man, we pulled a cord on that.
Wow.
Wow.
That was right on cue.
Now we got two.
What was that all about?
You can come back, but you need to behave, son.
Was that just me?
It was just you.
It was just you.
It was like, it said, snap, something broke. Well, anyways.
You need to try Linux.
I should try Linux. That's never happened to me before. I swear. Anyway, so May 2nd, Screensavers is being relaunched on the Twit Network, and they're going to have Megan Marone, so she's coming back, Mike Elgin, Jason Howell, Father Robert Ballister, and Brian Burnett. They're also going to have Patrick Norton, Kate Botello, and Kevin Rose coming on as guests. But I remember the screensavers. I would make it home from work. And call for help. I would make it there. You can actually go to, it's going to be Saturdays at 3, and they already have forms you can fill out in case you need help. So they'll call you, and you can call in and be live on the show.
But this is on his network, on Twit.
Oh, yeah. No, it's all on Twit.
We saw them, my brother and I, saw Leo and Patrick Norton at Best Buy in White Marsh, near where Door lives, back in... I think it was 96, somewhere around there, 97. But we didn't wait in line. It was too long. So I got to see his big head.
Oh, like they weren't shopping. They were there.
No, they were there. They were like on the tour. Yeah.
Oh, very cool. This was an app given to me here by another listener of our show. And it's called Snappy Driver Installer. Snappy Driver Installer. It says solving driver management headaches. I have never used this. I know there's a lot of people out there who are, they kind of have driver packs. I'm not one of those people.
I
let Windows install as many drivers as possible. I've never had any issues with that. And then I go out and I get from the manufacturer drivers that are missing. That's just me. I could be doing it wrong. I think it's a coin toss. But here you go.
Anything new, like within the last 5 or 7 years, you're not going to have problems finding drivers or some of the older devices, maybe.
But, it was given to us. So I thought I'd take this out and show you guys, share this with everybody. I don't know. I haven't used it. Like I said, not something that I've used before. But it says solving driver management headaches. So, and it's from Technible. It was a good place. I came up, there was another one here that I thought was actually pretty cool. And this one actually reminded me, I thought it was just a great refresher just for all of us. And again, it's from Technible, and the title is Making Time for Business in Your Computer Repair Business. And it's just five little tips. And it's things like set your working hours and stick to them. You are the most important client, schedule time for yourself. What are the business parts of your business? And so that's things like sales and marketing, accounting, bookkeeping, customer service. Decide the parts of your business that you want to do yourself and then outsource other parts of your business to professionals. And I thought, I've been doing this now for 3 years And I thought, what a great reminder of just, you know, for me, you know, things like, you know, stick with what you know. You don't have to be. It's okay to be the jack of all trades, but if you get to the point where you're overloaded, and I've learned this myself, you're going to have to, you can't do it all. I thought I could be a networker, or I thought I could be a graphic designer and design web pages and stuff. No, I didn't help anybody by making them crappy web pages. I give that to graphic designers, and they make great graphic web pages. And then I can get clients by outsourcing those. And I'm still working on the make time for yourself thing.
Yeah? You are?
Yeah.
What? What would you do with time that you made for yourself?
Well, and actually lately, I'm going to whisper this very quietly so people don't hear me, is that it's been nice. I've had time to just relax and to just catch up. I haven't had time to like start any new projects, but I've had time to just recoup, and I'm not pegged red line all day long, which is nice. So
yeah, you look pretty happy. You don't like stress like you normally do.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You remember how I used to come in here and just
I don't know when can we do a show next? I don't know. I'm so busy. Oh my gosh. No, it's okay.
That's true.
I remember him just verbally abusing us, just lambasting us. Then you throw a switch, he's like, "Oh, well, here we are, it's the Geeksters, episode 32. I'm all happy now." You know. And I'm in the corner back here crying. I just, you know, I don't even have my cameras turned off, and those were hard times, man. I'm glad you're definitely doing better anymore. I'm glad for that, you know.
I mean, we'll talk after the show. It's okay.
You could make a warehouse man cry.
I have.
Me? My back, my hip was. I felt like crying yesterday. Like,
dude, come back here on that fork truck. You're going five miles an hour. I can keep up with you. Don't make me walk briskly.
That's right. Don't make me mall walk.
clipping. Now. Hey, Tim, you missed it. I don't think you're in here yet. I had to go to doctors yesterday, something's going on with my hip, and
okay.
She checked me for hernia.
Mm.
And I said, if I pay extra, will you do it again?
And?
Nah, I'm only kidding.
She gave him change.
No,
that's right. She did say any more than one hernia check is purely recreational. Said,
do I need a chaperone in here? I said, no, I trust you.
I trust you.
That's right.
Hey, you're getting up there. You're getting in like that range, that dirty old man range. You know,
I am an old man.
I play that, you know, because it's like you can say things that, but you're like kind of like sexually non-threatening, so you can pretty much say anything you want.
You're right about that.
Yeah, that's you can say anything you want and get away with it. There's a lot of freedom there.
Well, guys, unfortunately, we got to cut the show a little bit shorter than we normally do today. I've got some prior arrangements that I need to get to. And I feel like
your segues, man. It's like
I gotta work on them.
You know, when it comes to sexually non-threatening, we're cutting this show short.
So, Mitch, people want to get a hold of us, send us a voicemail. What's the best way they can do that?
Geeksters@podnuts.com, and we'll take those voicemails. But we love Jeff, but some other people call us at 7076-PODNUT. That's 707-676-3688.
Very nice, Tim.
People want to get online now.
What's the best way they can get a hold of you, Tim?
And find me. I'm Tim Bauermeister on the G+.
Very nice. I'm Martin at Obando Computing. Again, I'm here. We're here every. We try to be weekly. We've been doing much better, which is nice. But go ahead and just give us a call. Send us
a fiscal week.
It's a fiscal week. It is a fiscal week. I'm Obando in Google+. Obando Computing in the IRC. Guys, thanks for hanging out with us again this week. I will come back with rejuvenated. Splendor from Northwest Linux Fest, and hanging out with our fellow Podnutsians. So, guys, have a great fiscal week, and don't forget to be Geraldo. We'll see you next time.